2 weeks ago, I began a one of my two-part kind of talks, the title of which was Resistance is Futile. And I'd like to continue that, mostly because I just like the title, but, you know, we'll make use of it. Really, the theme, which is what I consider to be really the heart of the Dharma, the teachings, is that in any moment that we are resisting, are fighting, are at odds with what's right here, there's suffering. That's just the bottom line. When we're tensing against the life of the moment, there's a sense something's missing, something's wrong. Then there's a kind of an armoring, a tightness in our hearts and our beings. And what we do then is we try to control things to make it different. That's kind of the way we're rigged. So we move around, or we try to fix things, or we judge things. We numb ourselves. Or if it's others, we try to fix them or numb them or in some way push them away. And it's pervasive, and it's often unconscious. I mean, you might even think of a conversation you had today with someone. Just a conversation that you had, and maybe especially if it was a stressful conversation. And how there's always in any conversation some element, unless we're really awake and free, where we're trying to control how another person experiences us. We're in some way trying to control so that they understand us or agree with us or like us or keep their distance and get away from us. But there's usually an agenda where there's some wanting or fearing and therefore some controlling. If there's any sense of selfness, of moi, there's some sense of other and some sense of a need for the other to either give us something or not hurt us. Control. So I've called this the body of fear, these different ways that we navigate trying to get our way, trying to have life be the way we want it to be. And the body of fear is very physical. You might notice when I say, okay, just kind of scan through and relax, that if you're really aware, there's a lot of clenching. You notice that? How much? I know for myself, I'll scan through and relax, and then if I check again, you know, 10 seconds later, there's a reclench. It's just very deep in our nervous system to tighten against life. So we do it through our bodies. We do it emotionally. There's all this biochemistry telling us to fight and flight and all that. And then our biggest way that we try to control our world so that it cooperates with us is through our thoughts. I mean, it's our great accomplishment as humans, and thoughts are incredible. They allow us to be creative and communicate. And because we are so often operating out of fear and craving, that's what they're in service of. And so we just go along at a good clip. And sometimes it's a little bit astonishing. If you think back on today, how many moments were you off on thought trains, figuring things out or recollecting or planning or worrying? For most of us, it's a lot. So this controlling is not something perverse. I mean, we're meant as organisms to try to thrive and survive. The challenge is that it gets overdone. And tonight I'd like to emphasize or explore how our thinking, when it's in service of fear and wanting, keeps us imprisoned in a way that we cannot discover what we really are. When we're believing our thoughts, when we're living in our stories and buying in those moments we can't be intimate with ourselves, with each other. And in the deepest way, we can't experience the realization of what we are. Now, a lot of it, at least what I've noticed, is that we're always trying to figure something out. And it never works. It's like, doesn't matter. We might come to resolutions or conclusions, but it's like we're always on our way trying to figure out something, the next thing. When we look into the body of fear, what we find at the core is a perception of a self in here and a world out there. And then as we begin to operate off that selfness, that tightening, we develop what I call kind of a spacesuit. We have this kind of an armoring, which I've also described in here as a kind of a mask, where we, some of you might remember the word persona comes from the Greek, in the times of ancient Greeks, the theater, where the actors would wear a mask. You know, and they'd be playing the roles of their mask, and the persona is the mask. And what's forgotten is that we are what's looking through. And we get identified with these masks, with these beliefs, these stories, these ideas. And the suffering is that we have forgotten the wholeness of what we are. That we're caught on a kind of fragment of our being. And it's very deep conditioning. It's very deep conditioning. So the practice of meditation is to recognize the mask, to recognize the stories and the behaviors that we think we are, and turn the awareness back, saying, who's here really? Coming home. And the actual skill or practice is a letting go over and over again. Because what we find is we've hitched onto this mask, onto this spacesuit. There's kind of a hitching on, and that there's not more doing to do. It's just a de-hitching that we keep on having. It's like a clenched fist. That the practice is to relax that clenching over and over again. Notice a thought, relax the clenching around it, which is really just the believing in it. Notice the body's tighten, relax the tightness. Wakeful relaxing. This is Sri Narsargadatta. He says, when the mind is momentarily free from its preoccupations, it becomes quiet. If you do not disturb this quiet and stay in it, you find that it is permeated with a light and a love you have never known, and yet you recognize it at once as your own nature. Once you have passed through this experience, you will never be the same person again. An unruly mind may break its peace and obliterate its vision, but it is bound to return, provided the effort is sustained, until the day when all bonds are broken, delusions and attachments end, and life becomes supremely absorbed in the present. After teaching this, there was a question that was asked to Sri Narsargadatta, and it was, how shall I recognize this state when I reach it? The stateless state. And the response is, there will be no fear. All distinctions between the personal and the universal are no more. So any training in meditation is recognizing the thoughts, the beliefs that keep us from really arriving in this wholeness right here. In this presence right here, just recognizing them and relaxing the grip. And 2 weeks ago, we explored how to begin relaxing the grip in the body. And you might even right now just check in and just sense, okay, so what's happening? It's these two questions, what's happening? And can there be an allowing, kind of a softening, a making space for what's here? So we begin with the body. what does it mean to let go through the body? Just take some moments, just check in. What happens? What we find is that if our mind is somewhat quiet, the body quiets. And when the mind is quiet for a bit, there's not as much of a reclenching. But for most of us, there's enough habit of preoccupation. In other words, our minds are running stories. The stories give a message to the body, and the body tenses. So the next step then is, okay, we relax our body some, but then we begin to notice what's going on emotionally. Are we caught in a fearful self? Is there a sense of an angry self? An anxious self? So we start noticing that. And the next practice of letting go with emotions is to let go of the story we're running and come and feel where that energy, that fear, anger, that sadness, the depression is living in our body, and open and allow that. Now here's the challenge. Okay, you can open your eyes if you'd like. The challenge is that we teach this a lot here, how to let go of the stories and keep opening to where emotions live in the body, and that the practice is breathe with it, feel it, open to it. In other words, let go of resistance. But what makes it so difficult is that the story that keeps the fear or the anger alive keeps rerunning. And to the extent that we believe that story, in other words, that we've bought in, something's wrong with me, something's wrong with you, to the extent that we have bought in, okay, we're going to be caught in this proliferation. The emotion will stay. We'll still have an identification as a fearful self or an angry self. So the thoughts are the glue that keep us imprisoned in this kind of, in the selfing, as they call it. And the challenge is that we're very hooked on thinking in the same ways. It's very hard to let go of our ways of thinking. There's a story about a magician who's working on a cruise ship, and he has a parrot that's always ruining his act, saying in the middle of the trick, "The card's up his sleeve," or he might be saying, "He has a dove in his pocket, look over there, left pocket," or "He slipped it through a hole in his hat." In other words, always screwing him up. So one day the ship sank, and the parrot and the magician found themselves together on a life raft. For several days, the parrot sat silently and just stared at the magician. On the fourth day, the parrot said, "Okay, I give up. What did you do with the ship?" And I like that, because we lock into our idea about how it is. And it doesn't matter what the evidence is. We just keep on the same track. It's opposite of a paradigm shift. We do it in ways that actually cause huge, huge suffering. And I want to talk tonight about one of the ways that our thoughts keep us most trapped in suffering, which is this believing that we're right. You know, we each want a more peaceful world. I'm going to make this assumption. There's not one person here that doesn't want to have this world become more peaceful and more loving. And there's not one person here that really wouldn't like to see us really embrace difference and see through the mask to who's really here. Not one of us that wouldn't really want to see that. And yet we tell ourselves stories that turn us against ourselves and turn us against each other. And we believe them. And we're so hooked that it doesn't matter what happens. It's like that parrot. Okay, what'd you do with the ship? It's like, it doesn't matter what the evidence, we're still a bad person or the other person's a bad person. So we do it in little ways, daily ways, that we assume that something's wrong. We have our ways of reading things. I like this story about after the christening of his baby brother in church, Jason sobbed all the way home in the back seat of the car. His father asked him three times what was wrong, and finally the boy replied, that preacher said he wanted us brought up in a Christian home, and I wanted to stay with you guys. You know, so these ideas that we have. So one of the big ideas that we have and that we think is right, is true, is that we have to be vigilant and that we're going to make mistakes and there's going to be really bad consequences. So we can't afford to relax. We really believe that we have to stay really vigilant. I can speak from my own life right now that I'm in one of the most formally high-stress phases of life that I've been in the sense that I'm just bought a house across the river in Northern Virginia. I'm going to still be teaching here, by the way. But so I just bought a house, and I'm having to now sell my house in Carter Rock, and we don't know when we're going to be ready to move in. And it's just just a lot of pressure, plus I have a full-on teaching schedule. So what happens is it sets off in me this kind of fight-flight response whereby I always have this notion that there's something I'm not remembering, and then I should be doing something else than I'm doing in the moment. Do you know that feeling? Like whatever you're doing, there's something else you should be doing. And I have to keep reminding myself that, okay, things are going to play out however they play out, but this moment is this moment. But there's a belief in there that I'm going to blow it and that there's consequences, that the consequences are bad. You know, there's a reporter who asks a bank president who's very well known in the business world, "Sir, what is the secret of your success?" And the response, two words. What? Right decisions. Okay, you know how important right decisions are. And how do you make the right decisions? One word. And sir, what is that? Experience. And how do you get experience? Two words. And sir, what are they? Wrong decisions. So we have these ideas that we're going to blow it and that something really bad's going to happen. And it can become the sense of, I'm not okay. The sense that of not enough can end up, I've been giving you kind of lightweight examples, can end up imprisoning us in such a way that we never really feel close with other people. This belief, I'm talking about this belief that we really think is true, that something's wrong with us, that we're not enough. I've shared with some of you some years ago when I was teaching at IMS, a woman was describing her mother's dying process and how she was with her at the very, very last days of her life, and her mother was going in and out of a coma. And at one point, she kind of woke up and was incredibly lucid, looked her in the eye and said, "You know, all my life I thought something was wrong with me." And then she closed her eyes, she lay back, and within a few hours she was gone. So these were the final words. And that for this woman, it was an incredible gift. Because she got how her mother had believed something that actually created her whole life experience. Her whole life experience emerged out of that belief that something was wrong with me. For each of us, to the extent that we believe beliefs about ourselves that are limiting, we are unable to recognize the luminosity and the love, the awakeness that is what we are. So just to practice a little with this, because again, tonight we're talking about resistance really as the resistance we have in our mind, the way we hold on to thoughts and beliefs. And the inquiry really is, what beliefs are we holding on to about ourselves that keep us from freedom? So let me just ask you for a moment, and this isn't something that's like a 3-minute exercise, but just to give you a taste. So let this be a pause where you can really, with sincerity, just feel yourself here. Just allow yourself to let go into here-ness. What does it mean to let go of resistance in your body, to really relax and allow the life that's here? Just give yourself the gift of letting go on the shoulders even a little. Softening the hands. Relaxing your heart. And you might just invite whatever situation in your life wants attention right now, where you sense some stuckness, where you're contracted. Where you feel not okay about yourself and how you're with this. So some situation where you might have turned on yourself a bit. And just to ask yourself, what is it that you're believing about yourself? What belief are you holding to? Is your life getting organized around? Is it that you're not enough? That you won't be loved by others? That you're not special or you can't make a difference? What's the belief? And you might just ask yourself, is this belief true? I mean, do I really know this is true? And just listen with your body as you ask that. Sense where the belief lives in your body. You might hear the words of the belief. Sense what they mean to you. Feel in your body. How has this belief shaped itself in your body? Can you feel that? And just to deepen the inquiry, what would you be like without this belief, without believing it? What would you be like? Who would you be, or what would you be without this belief? not to think with your mind about it, but rather to experience with your awareness. There's a poem called Awakening Now. This begins with, why wait for your awakening? Holding on to these beliefs. The moment your eyes are open, seize the day. Would you hold back when the beloved beckons? Would you deliver your litany of sins like a child's collection of seashells, prized and labeled? No, I can't step across the threshold, you say, eyes downcast. I'm not worthy. I'm afraid and my motives aren't pure. I'm not perfect and surely I haven't practiced nearly enough. My meditation isn't deep and my prayers are sometimes insincere. Do you value your reasons for staying small more than the light shining through the open door? Forgive yourself. Now is the only time you have to be whole. Now is the sole moment that exists to live in the radiance of your true nature. Now, here. Perfection is not a prerequisite for anything but pain. Please, oh please, don't continue to believe in your stories of separation and failure. This is the day of your awakening. So the deepest resistance to realizing what we are is holding on to beliefs about ourselves, about our smallness, about our insufficiency. Whenever there's suffering, there's some belief in there about what's wrong. When we begin to recognize them, you don't have to do much about them, but to really notice, oh, belief, and what is this doing to my gut, my heart? When you begin to really see clearly the tightness, there's a natural kind of loosening, there's more space. We begin to, instead of be identified with the mask, with the one who is trying to compensate for smallness, we begin to rest back in the awareness that's peering through. You are the awareness that's peering through. That wakefulness. You're the silence that's listening. The masks come and go. They're conditioning. They're strong conditioning. And the beliefs keep us thinking that's who we are. It's not true. So this is the crux of the spiritual path, not believing the story of the small separate self. Trusting the awareness that's listening right now, the openness, the love. When we begin to see past our own mask that that's not what we are, we begin to look at each other and see that the one that's looking at us is not that particular personality or persona or behavior, but is really the divine looking out at us, the same that's looking out at them. It's challenging, though, because, again, we have this strong conditioning to identify with our own limiting stories, and the more we do it, to look at others and categorize and have them become unreal others, in other words, separate others, and see deficiency, see what's wrong, see what's threatening, push them away. So the bottom line, until we're willing to challenge our own certainty, I know that I'm bad or I know that you're bad. Until we're willing to challenge it, completely challenge it, the door is not open for the light to shine through. In Buddhism, this is called don't know mind. that when I ask the question, do you know if that belief is true? If we say absolutely not, that's still certainty. If we say absolutely yes, that's certainty. The courage is to not be so certain, to not know, to have that space of not knowing, so that what we are, which is that space, we can realize and inhabit. So when we're talking about letting go, we're not talking about, well, I'll let go of judging this person like that, or I'll let go of this vacation, or I'll let go of getting this new car. We're talking about letting go of our deeply held views about things. Even that, there's this humility of, don't know. And the most awake and free people I know, when you ask them certain questions, they'll go, don't know. Because it's so silly. We go around acting like we know what we're doing. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, we act so certain about, we know what this is. We have this view about the world or politics, and we're a Democrat because of this, or we have this view of morality or ethics. And we think we know the way things should be, and we think we know what should happen because of things. There's no space in that. I'm not talking about letting go of wise discrimination where we notice, oh, when this happens, this happens. And because we care, we take care. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this righteousness and this certainty of, well, I'm screwed up or you're screwed up. This is a poem called Peace. Do you think peace requires an end to war? Are tigers eating only vegetables? Does peace require an absence from your boss, your spouse, yourself? Do you think peace will come in some other place than here? Some other time than now? Some other heart than yours? Peace is this moment without judgment. Peace is this moment without judgment. Peace is this moment, here without judgment. That's all. This moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. Peace is this moment without thinking that it should be some other way, that you should feel some other thing, that your life should unfold according to your plans. So we believe we want peace, and we believe we want healing, and we believe we want freedom. And yet our way of resisting all of that is this holding to, I know what's right, I'm bad, you're bad, something's wrong, we've got a problem. I was teaching recently in New England and worked with a woman who was caught in a really painful family schism. And several years ago, she had had her brother put into an institution. And she had considered his erratic behavior and his depression and his anger a threat to his two younger children, and mostly a threat to himself. So she had enrolled his wife, and when he got out, it was a couple of months, huge blame and huge anger towards her. And in a short time, the wife asserted that she, in fact, had never wanted it to happen that way, and she had been manipulated. And then the two of them, you know, she basically became the scapegoat. The whole family, in fact, looked at her like she had really done something out of line. And so she felt an enormous amount of hurt and betrayal. And so she came to me saying, what do I do? You know, it's like, she's lying. She completely was into this. You know, what am I supposed to do? And So I started working with her, and we did a little bit of the kind of inquiry that you just did, where, you know, she was basically saying, you know, the guy was a complete nutcase, and he needed to be in an institution for the kid's sake, and so on. And now I'm being scapegoated. And so I said, well, are you certain? I mean, are you certain that you were right? Are you certain that you are right? That you know how things are? And at first she said, yes, sure, absolutely. And I kept asking, and she said, no, of course I'm not certain. And then as she sat with it, and she came back, this was at a retreat, she sat with it some, and she came back, and she had flipped, and she said, I'm bad, I'm a mess, I can't believe myself. You know, I said, are you certain about that? You see how it is? It's like somebody else is wrong, and then we're wrong. We flip back and forth. And to finally, she got to know, I just don't know. And that's how she put it. She goes, I don't know. And I said, that's it. Stay. I don't know. And this is where it takes courage, because we'd rather know something and be right than that nowhere to stand, groundless place. So that's where we worked. That's where there was a gap. And I said, just stay. And so she said, okay, in this place, there's fear. Not knowing, there's fear. There's huge loss, there's sadness. And then in that gap of not knowing, she said, what I really want is I want connection. I want us all to be close again. So that courage to not know creates space. And then we get more and more in touch with what you might call true nature, what our deepest heart is. Intention is. But then she said, well, how do I know what to do or what to say? Like, should I call them? What should I do? And so what I encouraged her to do was to absolutely be willing to stay not knowing what was right, who was right, not even knowing what to do, to not know. And what I encouraged her to do was to let any action that she made come out of either silence or loving. In other words, not out of figuring. Okay? Silence or loving. And that combo I heard from a teaching last year, I think it was Adi Ashanti. He said, let any action you make come out of silence or loving. And that, I found that, you know, to go into don't know mind, and then just there's so much truth comes from that. So the retreat ended. We had a phone session some weeks later. And she said she had done the meditation she was doing was one that Srinarsargadatta teaches, which says, if you're feeling separation, just reflect on I am God and you are God. That's all. So she said she kept doing that and staying in the not knowing about anything else. And she said she did end up talking to them, and she could feel that there wasn't blame and that they were very, very wary, and she didn't know where it was going, but something in her trusted that if her heart stayed open, it was all okay. The resistance is the certainty. I know. I'm right. This is bad. I'm bad. So the question sometimes comes up, but aren't there real harmful things? Don't you sometimes get into a situation where you're creating harm for others or they're creating harm and something needs to be done? And the truth is yes. And we need to respond, not react. I don't care whether we're talking about the war in Iraq, where there's a reactivity that then obviously sowed the seeds of more violence, or we're talking about how we talk to our partner, our friend, or our child. But if we need to intervene and it comes out of fear, anger, righteousness, rightness, judgment, if our hearts are hard, that's what we're planting the seeds for. If we cannot be so certain that we know, or that we're right, if we cannot be so certain who's wrong, if we can go to a genuine place of quietness and caring, then out of that, there'll be a spontaneity and a wisdom and an intelligence that guides us. So the practice to keep on recognizing our storyline, and usually it has a sense of victimization in it. I'm a victim or we're a victim. Notice it when there's suffering, when there's stress, how quickly that happens. And there's often a sense of wanting to get back when there's suffering. I told a story some time ago about grievance, about when we have our judgments of others and we've hardened. And it's all of us. I mean, there's always somebody that we've kind of latched on to as the enemy or in some way getting in our way. But sometimes it can really be what we're organized around. I'd like to read you what Wellwood, a psychologist, writes. He says, nursing a grievance, treating our intimate partner as someone to get back at, or resenting how badly life or other people have treated us or treated others, it's a self-destructive act. For in wanting to hurt or reject someone or something we resent, we unwittingly wind up hurting or rejecting ourselves at the same time. This is easy to see. Just notice how your whole body and mind tightens and constricts when you hold something against someone. When you do this, you're destroying your own life, the presence, openness, and warmth that is your lifeblood. So to make the other bad at the expense of feeling good ourselves is to choose death over life. We're going to be ending tonight with an exercise of where we're holding on to certainty and judgment, because for me, in my own practice, I found over and over again that it's one of the most powerful day-to-day ways for me to wake up out of my ideas of a small self is whenever I'm blaming, whenever I'm judging, to challenge it, to not believe it, to go into don't know mind, to be willing to feel the quakiness, the fear, the anger, the hurt, and come back home through presence versus buying into being right. And there's that equation or inquiry, really. Do you want to be right or do you want to be free? It's a good one. I shared here a few months ago a story that really touched me about an African tribe, very wise, called the Ku. And they have a ritual that when someone murders someone, after a year of mourning, there's a ritual. And the killer is put into a boat, and that person's bound and thrown overboard. And they can't swim because they're bound, so they start sinking. And the family of the dead has a choice. And they can either let the person drown, and justice will be served, or they can swim out and save the killer's life. And if they let the killer drown, they can sense that justice was served, but their hearts will be bound and they will mourn for the rest of their lives. If they save that person, that very act can heal their lives. The way that the story or ritual ends is vengeance is a lazy form of grief. Vengeance is a lazy form of grief. And whether we're talking about the big vengeances of, you know, going and striking out at another country, or at blaming and ostracizing a person, or judging our child, that acting out of fear and anger takes us away from the very place in our own hearts that most wants attention and to the presence that most will reconnect us with our own wholeness. we become identified with the mask, which is the righteous one that's getting back, versus the one who right now is listening, the one who is looking through the mask, that awareness, that openness that's right here. So just as a way to conclude, and we'll do our final sitting, is to say that it is a universal part of our conditioning. When things are unpleasant or we don't like them, to try to control. It's just when there's any sense of me, hand in hand with a sense of me is a need to protect me, or to protect our enlarged sense of who we are, our group or our friends. It's a universal conditioning. So not to judge that, not to add another layer of judgment, that we get controlling and protective. And yet to not buy in, to challenge our belief that I'm bad or you're bad. I've seen that the people that are most free and most awake cannot look at another person and see badness. That doesn't mean we don't see how other people can create harm out of their own confusion. We see it. But we can see the behind the mask. And our actions, if they come from silence and love, will be to call out that awareness and beauty that's behind the mask, not to reinforce that protective mask. To trust that that's who we are, that awareness. Rumi writes, "I am so small, I can barely be seen. How can this great love be inside me? Look at your eyes. They are small, but they see enormous things." The resistance, the holding on to the beliefs, is futile because it doesn't get us what we want. Awareness wants to realize itself through these body minds. Love wants to realize itself through these body minds. And our ways of tensing our body, our ways of believing our beliefs, disconnect us from the wholeness that's here. So let's sit together. We'll do a last kind of practice. And this is really about healing the pain of separation. To just feel yourself here and sense in your life where there's separation, where, as Ramakrishna puts it, we've pushed someone out of our hearts. Because anywhere that we've pushed one person out of our heart means that our hearts are armored. And to bring our attention, there is an opportunity to reconnect with wholeness. Where are we holding on to rightness, to making someone wrong? Sense how it feels if you let yourself kind of exaggerate or completely recognize the situation where somebody's wrong, they're out of your hearts. Sense what it's like. You might sense the reasons you've pushed them out of your heart, and sense how it feels to push someone out of your heart. to be willing to put down your ideas of rightness and wrongness and just feel, whether it's hurt or fear, what just fear, what, feel what's underneath, behind the pushing away of another. If you take away the wrong, you're bad, just to feel in your heart, is it fear? Is it hurt? To breathe with what's here in this not knowing, of, with it not being certain about rightness and wrongness, just to breathe with the vulnerability. To bring a very pure presence. To that soft place in your heart. So there's real kindness towards the pain you're holding. Just give it space. If it helps to put your hand on your own heart and in that way more fully sense that presence with the hurt place, the scared place. So this is going underneath the storyline, not believing the beliefs. Just letting there be awareness of what's right here. Breathing with it. For some, just offering a message of care. Like that Hawaiian healer that says whenever he's feeling vulnerability, his own and others, he says, I'm sorry, I love you. Right to the place that's hurting. Sensing the space that can open up when we're just simply here with what is, without judgment. Behind our mask of being right or righteous or separate, there's this space, this caring, this presence. And a sense that if you could look at the other with an awake heart, you could sense behind that mask, behind the fearful, confused behaviors, there's this same presence and space and mystery. We're the same. Do you think peace will come some other place than here? Some other time than now? In some other heart than yours? Peace is this moment without judgment. That is all. This moment in the heart space where everything that is welcome. For these last few moments, sensing what it means to just awake, feel the body without any resistance. Everything is welcome. Everything that is. Sensing this heart without resistance. Everything is welcome. Everything that is welcome. Sense who you are, what you are, when there's no resistance. And just inhabit that mystery. Right here, right now. We'll offer our collective prayer that our time tonight reflecting, praying, meditating be of benefit to all beings, that all beings might awaken and realize the love and awareness that is their essence, that there be peace on earth and peace everywhere. May all beings be free. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.